People in Iran and several other countries celebrate the Persian New Year known as Nowruz. In his New Year message, Iran's leader hails the Iranian nation for its fight against the coronavirus pandemic as well as its fight against the U.S. maximum pressure campaign. And thousands of people protest against coronavirus restrictions in Germany amid an exponential surge in the country's infection rates. Hello and welcome from Tehran. You've tuned into World News. I'm Marzia Hashimi, taking this time to wish all of those who are celebrating a very happy Nowruz. People in Iran and several other countries are celebrating the ancient festival of Nowruz, which marks the beginning of the Persian calendar year. They usually become a shopping frenzy to prepare themselves for the arrival of spring. In Iran, Nowruz falls on March the 21st of this year. One of the traditions of Nowruz is to set a table called the Hafseed, which contains seven items, beginning with the Persian S sound. Iranians both inside the country and other places are in festive mood, and the day starts with the week-long holidays. Folks also make New Year resolutions, hoping to have a better year ahead. Another Nowruz tradition is to call on relatives and have get-togethers with family and friends. However, people this year have been advised to stay home and avoid travels and gatherings due to the coronavirus outbreak. Well, the leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has highlighted the country's resistance in the face of the coronavirus crisis over the past year. Ayatollah Khamenei also praised people in confronting the U.S. maximum pressure campaign, saying Iran knew it was doomed to fail. He added that the enemies headed by the U.S. have even acknowledged the failure of the anti-Iran campaign. The leader underlined that the year 1400 is important, as there will be a presidential election and more steps to boost production. He called for legal and governmental mechanisms to remove obstacles to domestic growth. Ayatollah Khamenei made the remarks during a speech marking the Iranian New Year's, or Nowruz. Meanwhile, President Hassan Rouhani says Iran's enemies have no way but to resume constructive interaction with the Islamic Republic. Rouhani made the comment in his New Year's address to the nation. He said the enemies have admitted that they cannot speak to the Iranian nation with a language of force, threats, and our sanctions. Rouhani was referring to the so-called U.S. maximum pressure campaign against Iran under former U.S. President Donald Trump. He said that Trump's policies failed due to the patience and perseverance of the Iranian nation. The president further called for national understanding in order to achieve economic stability and sustainable economic growth. And it's time for this hour's news review, as the EU has again warned it will ban exports of AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccines unless the former giant fulfills its supply obligations. Ursula von der Leyen says AstraZeneca has so far delivered only 30% of the 90 million vaccine doses it had promised for the first quarter of the year. Von der Leyen says the EU's contract with AstraZeneca states that vaccines destined for the bloc would be produced in both EU and UK plants. She says Britain has not delivered any doses to the EU, about which the European Commission has complained to the Anglo-Swedish firm. The EU is facing an acute shortage of COVID jabs, while many member states are facing the third wave of the pandemic. Well, I'd like to welcome both my guests for this news review. Out of Brussels, Jerome Hughes, and out of London, Robert Carter. Welcome both of you to the program. Well, let's start it off in Brussels, and Jerome. So tell us what's going on and what's the EU saying and what are they planning on doing with this?
Marzia, I think relations between the EU and the UK are irreparably damaged at this stage. I mean, you had the protracted Brexit negotiations that seemed to go on for a lifetime, and they were very harsh indeed in terms of their tone on many occasions. Now you have the EU effectively suing the UK for alleged breaches of elements of the Brexit agreements. And now you have this whole debacle over the vaccines. And really the larger question here is what will happen in the future. You would have to imagine that there will be zero cooperation in the future between the EU and the UK, perhaps when we have another crisis, because we've had many crises, the refugee crisis, financial crisis. What could the next crisis be, and what level of cooperation will there be between these powers? And so that is a big issue going forward. But right now, I mean, Ursula von der Leyen, earlier this week, she was highlighting that the EU has exported more than 40 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines produced here in the EU, and a quarter of those, so 10 million, have gone to the UK. And she talks about reciprocity and the need for perhaps better cooperation, because they're very annoyed that they're exporting vaccines to a country like the UK that has now vaccinated, inoculated half of the population. And yet here in the EU, we have major problems in terms of having vaccine supply. So a lot of these vaccines are leaving the EU. And it comes down to the fact that the UK, though, is saying, obviously, that, you know, it wants to get the job done, it wants to finish the job. And there's a lot of cynicism here in the EU side as well about the figures that are coming out of the UK, because they're saying that there's just a lack of clarity. There sort of seems to be all this clandestine movement in the background, both here in the EU and in the UK, in terms of what's happening to doses, where they're being produced, where they're being sent to, because we can't get any figures on how many doses have been exported from the UK. And in their defence, Boris Johnson has been using this figure of providing £550 million towards this COVAX initiative, which is supposed to distribute vaccines around the world. But really, people are saying, well, look, that's just money. What we really need are vaccines. And so it's easy to throw money at a problem. And as you mentioned in the introduction, Marcia, the big problem here, of course, is that the elephant in the room is AstraZeneca, because instead of 90 million doses before the end of this month, the firm is only going to deliver 30 million to the EU. So that's a breach of contract, according to the European Commission. And instead of 180 million doses in April, May and June, the company is saying it will only provide 70 million. So really, that's the crux of the problem, is the lack of contracts being fulfilled. And that's what's sort of behind fueling the pressure and the conflict between the EU and the UK.
Okay, well, Robert, tell me about the UK side of things. What's the British government saying, and their justification for the moves that they've been making with this?
Well, the UK has responded quite aggressively, and they have essentially issued their own threats against the European Union over the fact that the UK will be forced to respond to the EU if it persists with this narrative that the UK is holding back on vaccines and essentially engaging in what's been referred to as vaccine nationalism, essentially prioritising their own people above all others. But the issue of vaccines is getting a lot deeper, because, of course, you have major Western blocs such as the European Union or the US who are able to produce vaccines. But then there are also many third world countries which are not receiving many vaccines at all, and they don't have the ability to produce them. So what's happening now is a new debate, which is being headed by the WHO organization, the World Health Organization, is about, hang on a minute, there are certain countries that are making their own vaccines, prioritizing their own people, as it seems, and then there are other countries which are in major need of vaccines, and they're basically not receiving any. Take the US, for example. They claim to be the greatest superpower on the globe, yet they're practically not exporting any vaccines whatsoever. The UK, another major world superpower, is being accused of holding back vaccines and engaging in vaccine nationalism. So it's obviously there is a massive issue between the EU and the UK that's developing. It's getting worse. Their diplomatic relations are at an all-time low. But at the same time, this issue of vaccine hoarding is a Western issue, and it's developing into such. There are many more, arguably more in need countries, underdeveloped countries, which are basically being ignored completely. The UK and EU do still have the ability to produce their vaccines, even if their turnout is quite low. At least they're actually turning out some vaccines. But the UK as well also has problems. It's believed that there'll be a delay next month in vaccine rollout, simply because the UK has actually struggled with a contract, a shipment delivery that's expected from India, which has been delayed, plus this diplomatic spat with the European Union is expected to cause further delays. So April's not going to be a good month, and it's likely that the British government will be heavily criticised next month about this kind of stalling of the turnout.
All right, and the situation gets more and more complex between London and Brussels. Well, thank you both for being with us. Out of Brussels, that was Jerome Hughes, and out of London, Robert Carter. Well, protesters have gathered in several German cities to rally against coronavirus restrictions despite a surge in infections. One of the largest demonstrations was held in Kassel, with tens of thousands of people participating. Scuffles broke out between police and riot gear and protesters when police used pepper spray to disperse the crowd. Rallies were also planned in Berlin and Munich, among other cities. Demonstrators took to the streets to protest what they regard as unnecessary restrictions imposed by the government to curb the spread of COVID-19. Infection rates of the deadly virus are spiking again in Germany, with more than 16,000 new infections reported on Saturday. Meanwhile, hundreds of people have rallied in the British capital protesting against the government's lockdown measures. Anti-lockdown protesters have descended on central London despite police warning. The crowd chanted slogans demanding freedom and an end to the COVID-related lockdown measures. A number of protesters were arrested as they scuffled with police. The protest comes after 60 lawmakers called on the Home Secretary to ease COVID restrictions for protest rallies. London remains under a lockdown as coronavirus is taking a heavy toll on Britons. More than 4.2 million people have tested positive, and some 126,000 have died from COVID-19 in the UK. Well, crossing over the channel now to France, where a new partial lockdown has gone into effect to prevent the spread of COVID-19. Other restrictions have affected a third of the French population, with the capital Paris and parts of the north remaining on lockdown for 4 weeks. Parisians packed trains leaving the city and crammed into shops ahead of the new restrictions. Prime Minister Jean Castex has said the country is in the grip of a third wave of coronavirus infections. Official figures indicate that the variant discovered in Britain accounts for nearly 75% of the new cases. People in Poland and parts of Ukraine also woke up to tight restrictive measures. Chris DeHaan has cited reasons as why the lockdown may not be effective in containing the spread of the coronavirus in France. Let's take a listen.
Today we see that many people in Paris, they are running away from the capital of France to areas that are not under the lockdown. So this will necessarily increase new contaminations, that's for sure. And secondly, schools are centers of contaminations, and the French government is not closing schools because they want the economy going on, they want people go to work. But at the same time, children are contaminating each other. They do not have the symptoms. Fortunately, they are not sick, but they contaminate their parents and their grandparents. And then third main remark and the main criticism is the lack of a massive, rapid vaccination campaign. So France, they say it's a rich, developed country. They were not able to find their own vaccine, so they are dependent on importing the U.S. vaccines, Pfizer, AstraZeneca, and also the new one, Johnson & Johnson. France refuses still to import the Russian and the Chinese vaccine. The direct consequence is that many people want to be vaccinated and there are no vaccines. I mean, there are huge buildings open and available for people to come to be vaccinated, but there is a lack of jabs, lack of vaccines. The quantity of the vaccines is absolutely not sufficient.
And now to India, which has reported nearly 41,000 more coronavirus cases, the biggest jump in daily infections in nearly 4 months. The new figure has pushed the total caseload in the world's third worst affected country to 11.6 million. More than half the infections have been reported in the state Maharashtra, which is home to the densely populated commercial hub of Mumbai, several other states have also seen a surge in cases. Well, the spike has forced some districts to take containment measures, including lockdowns and the closure of public venues. Doctors blame the fresh infection wave on people's relaxed attitude to mask wearing and social distancing measures. This is while India's vaccination campaign is progressing slowly, with only 42 million out of over 1.3 billion people being vaccinated so far. India's fatalities are nearing 160,000. And now to Iran, which has reported over 7,500 new coronavirus cases and 75 more related deaths. The Iranian Health Ministry says 849 people have been hospitalized over the past day. This is while over 1.5 million people have recovered from the disease. The number of new cases and deaths in Iran has sharply dropped since November, when the country imposed tough restrictions to curb the pandemic. However, officials have sounded the alarm over complacency and laxity in following health protocols, as well as the spread of the more contagious and deadly variants of the virus. Iranians have urged to refrain from traveling during the New Year holidays. Now, the country has so far registered almost 1.8 million infections and nearly 62,000 deaths. Moving on to other news now this hour. U.S. President Joe Biden has denounced the surge of violence against Asian Americans in his country.
Too many Asian Americans have been walking up and down the streets and worrying, waking up each morning the past year feeling their safety and the safety of their loved ones are at stake. They've been attacked, blamed, scapegoated, and harassed. They've been verbally assaulted, physically assaulted, killed.
Biden made the remarks during a visit to the state of Georgia to console the Asian American community following a series of killings in Atlanta. Biden said hate has no place in the U.S. and called for an end to, quote, the ugly poison that's long haunted the country. He underlined that silence is complicity in race-related violence and that the nation must not be complicit in the face of racism and xenophobia. Vice President Kamala Harris also condemned the surge in violence against the community, calling racism a real issue in the U.S.
Racism is real in America, and it has always been. Xenophobia is real in America, and always has been. Sexism, too.
Harris also condemned, quote, people in positions of incredible power for spreading hate. On Tuesday, a deadly shooting rampage in Atlanta left 8 people dead, including 6 women of Asian descent. Asian Americans have been grappling with the rise in hate crimes since the coronavirus outbreak. Former U.S. President Donald Trump had directly blamed China for the pandemic, repeatedly calling the virus a Chinese one. Well, the Pentagon chief has warned India against its planned purchase of an advanced Russian missile system. Lloyd Austin says U.S. allies and partners could face sanctions if they do not steer clear of Russian equipment. In a press conference in India, Austin said Washington is aware of India's interest in acquiring the S-400. He added that he had discussed the planned purchase with the Indian Defense Minister. In 2019, India made an advance payment of $800 million to Russia for the long-range anti-aircraft missile system. Well, the first set of missile batteries are expected later this year. Last year, the U.S. imposed sanctions on Turkey for buying the S-400 system. And with that, that brings us to the end of this World News Edition. Thanks so much for staying tuned.
Thank you. congratulate all Iranians and Persian-speaking peoples of the world on the occasion of Nowruz.
In the limelight.
Studies show climate change is supercharging some weather and climate events and will lead to more severe and longer-lasting heat waves, stronger hurricanes, an increased wildfire risk, and a longer wildfire season, says Tara Lohan, writer, in an article published under the heading, Climate-Driven Extreme Weather is Imperiling Wildlife Conservation Efforts. Here's more. Hailstorm in South Texas, tornadoes in Tennessee, wildfires across the West, a barrage of hurricanes. Those are among the record 22 weather and climate disasters that each topped $1 billion in damages last year in the United States. In all, the price tag for 2020 hit a whopping $95 billion, and that's just in the United States. Reinsurance firm Swiss Reput global economic losses at $175 billion last year, including $32 billion for floods in China and $13 billion in damages from Cyclone Amphan across India and Bangladesh. Studies show that climate change is supercharging some weather and climate events and will lead to more severe and longer-lasting heat waves, stronger hurricanes, an increased wildfire risk, and a longer wildlife season. We can also expect more heavy rain events and severe droughts, not to mention other extreme events like February's polar vortex. You can't attribute any particular storm to climate change, but what we can do know is that climate change tips the odds of making many of these events more severe, says Bruce Stein, chief scientist and associate vice president at the National Wildlife Federation. While experts tabulate the economic losses, including homes destroyed, crops ruined, businesses shuttered, ecosystems and wildlife can also sustain damage that's harder to quantify. Many plants and wildlife evolve with and have adapted to dealing with large-scale disturbances, but we are beginning to see mega disturbances at levels beyond what we saw in the past, says Stein, and that can take a toll. Extreme weather can kill animals directly or indirectly, like by destroying food sources, contaminating water, or altering habitat, forcing a species to move into areas where there may be more competition, fewer resources, or a greater risk of predation. What we begin to find when you get some of these mega disturbances is that it's beyond the ability of a species or their adaptive capacity to bounce back, says Stein. The effects of climate change on the natural world are being felt at two speeds. One is more gradual, referred to by scientists as ramping, shrinking glaciers, rising sea levels. The second is quick, like extreme weather events. Both are problematic, says Sean Maxwell, a postdoctoral research fellow at the University of Queensland Centre for Biodiversity and Conservation Science. But he adds, I think the changes to acute events have the greatest potential to devastate local populations or ecosystems, and the impacts of these events are often more difficult to plan or to avoid. Maxwell was the lead author of a 2018 study published in the journal Diversity and Distributions that examined how changes in the frequency and intensity of extreme weather and climate events affected wildlife. The researchers looked at 519 studies of ecological responses to extreme events, including cyclones, droughts, floods, and heat and cold waves that took place from 1941 to 2015. They found that the response was negative 57% of the time. Some of the negative responses we found were quite concerning, including more than 100 cases of dramatic population declines and 31 cases of local population extinction following an extreme event, says Maxwell. Populations of critically endangered bird species in Hawaii, such as the palea, have been annihilated due to drought, and populations of lizard species have been wiped out due to cyclones in Bahamas. Plant species, the researchers found, had the highest number of negative responses to extreme events, followed by reptiles and amphibians. Collectively, the studies in our review suggest that extreme weather and climate events have profound implications for species and ecosystem management, the researchers concluded. Species that are already threatened or endangered are, of course, especially at risk. Take the Atwater prairie chicken. A million of these birds once ranged across the prairie of Texas and Louisiana. Today, fewer than 100 remain in the wild, and scientists have sought to bolster their populations with captive breeding programs. But when Hurricane Harvey walloped Texas with 130 mile per hour winds and record rainfall in 2017, the birds were right in harm's way. The Atwater Prairie Chicken National Wildlife Refuge tracked 29 individual birds, mostly hens. Post-hurricane staff confirmed only 5 of them still alive, Texas Climate News reported. It added, the hurricane also killed roughly 80% of a prairie chicken population on private property in Goliad County. Other species with limited ranges, like those on islands, also face big threats. If a species is well distributed, then if one part of its range gets hit, there is the ability for it to recover, says Stein. But if essentially all its eggs are on one basket, and that particular place gets hit by one of these big disturbances, that's when you have a real concern. In 2017, Hurricane Maria cut the population of just 200 Puerto Rican parrots in half. The year before, Hurricane Matthew was believed to have wiped out Las Bahama nuthatches, that is, Sita insurils. It took 2 years before a few of the birds were found, and then Hurricane Dorian struck in 2019, making their survival unlikely, according to Diana Bell, a professor of conservation biology at the University of East Anglia. In fact, Dorian may have not only sealed the fate of the nuthatch, but also severely impacted other birds endemic to these islands, particularly the Bahama warbler and abaco parrot, Bell wrote in an essay for the conservation. Also known as the Bahama Amazon parrot, this subspecies uniquely nests in limestone cavities underground, which are likely to have been flooded by the storm surge. The risk to wildlife from extreme storms can be compounded by the ramping effects of climate change, too. if you have increasingly severe hurricanes where you'd also got sea level rise essentially providing a higher launch point for the storm surge, then you start seeing impacts beyond the historical record, says Stein. In other places, extreme weather is an extra blow to species already struggling with other environmental pressures like habitat loss, invasive species, or pollution. Last year, the world watched in horror as land use management, climate change, and drought helped push Australia's bushfires to a terrifying new level, killing 34 people and burning 37,500 square miles. In the immediate aftermath, one expert put the death toll for wildlife at 1 billion animals lost. Since then, the figure has been revised to 3 billion killed or displaced by the blazes. A study published in Nature Ecology and Evolution found that the fire impacted the critical habitats of 832 native species, with 70 species losing more than 30% of their natural range. 21 of those were already at risk of extinction. Those that survive could find themselves hard-pressed in future climate disasters. Multiple extreme events are likely to act in synergistic ways to exacerbate the risk of a species extinction, wrote Maxwell and the other researchers of 2018 study. Australia already has one of the highest extinction rates, and the wildfires could limit the capacity of some species to recover, like the endangered kangaroo island, Donart, and the long-footed Puturo, and threaten others. Australia's record blazes last year could push the number of endangered species in the country up by 19%, the study in Nature Ecology and Evolution found. When Hurricane Irma sacked the Florida Keys in 2017, the storm tossed boats ashore, destroyed more than 1,000 homes, and left a trail of debris across the islands. It also endangered one of the region's beloved endemic species, the tiny key deer, which today primarily live on Big Pine Key. Some deer were killed in the storm, and surviving animals faced threats to their already limited freshwater supply as the storm surge dumped saline ocean water into freshwater pools. Island residents responded the way folks often do after a disaster. They offered help to their neighbors. What you saw during and shortly after Irma is that these key deer were coming up to houses looking for fresh water, says Stein, and people were putting out kiddie pools of water for them. But beyond immediate food and water relief, there is a much bigger task ahead. Reducing greenhouse gas emissions to address the ongoing dangers of climate change and the ability of ecosystems to adapt. Key deer, for example, also face a long-term threat to their drinking water supply from rising seas. Sometimes no number of kiddie pools can repair. And more severe hurricanes are likely in their future, too. As climate change continues to ensure extreme climate and weather events are more and more common, we now need to act to ensure species have the best chance to survive, says Maxwell. Wherever possible, high-quality and intact habitat areas should be retained, as these are the places where species are most resilient to increasing exposure to extreme events. If such intact habitat doesn't exist, ecological restoration efforts can be used to help species adapt, his study found.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is Foresight. A program on how to worship Allah. Today's great tip, the secrets of congregational prayers in our Ubudiya, and why some people might not participate in these congregational prayers. So, dear listeners, it's really great to have you with us on the program. We're talking about how congregational prayers truly have these great rewards when it comes to our ubudiya, and it has great rewards both spiritually and materialistic benefits. But more specifically, we've been talking about some of the excuses, some of the reasons which people bring up in order to not attend the congregational prayers. Now, as we have said in many other programs, many times these excuses aren't really justifiable. They really are just excuses. So we wanted to go ahead and take some of these excuses which are brought forth in not wanting to attend congregational prayers and really nullify and void these excuses so that we can attend the congregational prayers, whether it is in our own home or at the local masjid, the mosque, or the Husseiniya or the Islamic Center, and really gain the benefits of this specific form of worship as regards to our ubudiya. Now, there are people who associate the shortcomings of the imams, the prayer leaders, kith and kin, meaning his relatives or his family. And so, because of the shortcomings of the prayer leader's family, people have a tendency to not accept this individual as the imam. So, for example, the imam's son, or the imam's daughter, or the imam's wife, you know, or even if we go farther, the imam's father-in-law, the imam's cousin, these people have some sort of shortcoming, some sort of flaw, some sort of mistake, some sort of imperfection. And because these people have an imperfection, we don't accept the prayer leader. Now, of course, you know, we have to keep everything in balance. Yes, if it is the immediate family of the imam who is doing, you know, bad things, and I'm talking about bad things, you know, whether it's, cheating or lying or stealing or, committing haram acts, you know, drinking alcohol or something like that. These are things that need to be addressed because this immediate family member of the prayer leader of the imam does reflect not only on him, but it has an impact on the society and the community as well. But here what we're talking about is we're talking about shortcomings. So the imam's son is really hyperactive, you know, or he really likes to play video games, or the, you know, the imam's daughter is a little bit rude. She doesn't say thank you. She doesn't say please. You know, it's these kind of shortcomings is what we're talking about. And these shortcomings, my dear friends, do not reflect the imam, and definitely these shortcomings of the imam's family, whether immediate or distant, does not take the imam out of being just, right? These are normal shortcomings that people have. They should be forgiven, they should be looked over, and if possible, sure, they should be rectified and helped and supported. But definitely, the shortcomings of the imam's kith and kin should not be a reason for us to not benefit from the spiritual and worldly benefits of congregational prayers.
In the name of Allah, Assalamu alaikum, dear brothers and sisters in faith. Welcome to this segment of the program, Foresight. My name is Muhammad, and today I'd like to read to you the English translation of an excerpt from Munajatul Raghibin, The Beseechers. My God, though my stores for traveling to you are few, my confidence in you has given me a good opinion. Though my sin has made me fear your punishment, my hope has let me feel secure from your vengeance. Though my misdeed has exposed to me to your penalty, my excellent trust has apprised me of your reward. Though heedlessness has put to sleep my readiness to meet you, knowledge has awakened me to your generosity and boons. Though excessive disobedience and rebellion have estranged me from you, the glad tidings of forgiveness and good pleasure have made me feel intimate with you. I ask you, by the splendors of your face and the lights of your holiness, and I implore you by the tenderness of your mercy and the gentleness of your goodness to verify my opinion in expecting your great generosity and your beautiful favor through nearness to you, proximity with you, and enjoyment of gazing upon you. Here I am, addressing myself to the breezes of your freshness and tenderness, having recourse to the rain of your generosity and gentleness, fleeing from your displeasure to your good pleasure, and from you to you, hoping for the best of what is with you, relying upon your gifts, utterly poor toward your guardian.
Welcome back, dear listeners, in continuation to what we were talking about, which were some of the common excuses that are put forth for not going to the congregational prayers, and we were going one by one and kind of trying to null and void these excuses that are brought forth for not going to the congregational prayers so that we can, one by one, remove these obstacles and join the spiritual and worldly benefits of congregational prayers, especially as regards to our ubudiyah, our servitude of Allah. Now, there are some people who, out of their arrogance or their pride, unfortunately, there are people who are not willing to participate in the congregational prayers under the leadership of a young person, relatively young person, or a relatively poor person. In spite of that prayer leader, that imam, being sincere, committed, religious, and meritorious. It is interesting, but we also find this same phenomenon in the history of Islam, where they used to say to Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, alayhi salam, peace and blessings upon him, that he is too young for the position of an imam, and thus they didn't allow him to be the caliph and the imam of the Muslims. When in fact the Holy Prophet himself made Osama, towards the end of his life, he made Osama, who was a young man, perhaps around the same age of 18 or 19, made him the commander of the army. And again, so the Prophet, based upon his courage, his sincerity, his committedness, determination, his steadfastness, made Osama commander of the army. And here again, people had a problem with this as well. Dear friends, age and social status and economic status, financial status, the kind of house you have, the kind of car you drive, the price tag of the clothes that you wear, these things, dear friends, are not the value, they're not the credentials necessary for one to be a good Muslim or for one to be the prayer leader. The thing that is of value, the thing which gives credential, is the knowledge of an individual, the wisdom of the individual, the religiosity of an individual, the sincerity of an individual, the knowledge and wisdom capacity that an individual has, and perhaps even the potential that an individual has, the capability, the ability that a person has. These things, dear friends, are what matters. And it is these things that need to be taken into consideration when we're talking about the prayer leader, not the age or the financial status of a person.
IRIB English Radio.
Our website is farstoday.com.
Now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Muhammad Khalfan.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Wabihi nasta'in. Wa sallallahu ala Muhammad. Wa alihi at-tayyibin at-tahirin al-ma'sumin. Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. One of the most beautiful sayings of Imam al-Ridha alayhi salam is on optimism, which in Arabic we say husnul dhan. When a person is optimistic with regard to somebody, he is muhsinul dhan, one who does husnul dhan. With regard to Allah, how should we be? This is what Imam is trying to tell us and teach us. He is reported to have said, ahsinul dhan billah, fa inna man hassana dhannahu billah, kana Allah inda dhannihi. It is a very powerful statement. Listeners, if you come to understand the depth of this statement, your whole life will change. We are told here, have a good opinion of Allah. That means think well about Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Don't jump into conclusions. Sometimes you find that, let's say a person gets sick, you start complaining, oh Allah, it is because you made him sick. Don't do that. Think properly. Sometimes you get hurt, sometimes you get a loss. these losses and this getting hurt and all these problems is sometimes very good for you. Sometimes it's because what you have done to yourself. But don't just say that, oh Allah, why did you make me sick? Why did you make my mother sick, for example? Why did you make this person die, and so on? Whatever Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala is doing for us, it is the best. Obviously, this is important to know that whatever happens is by His permission. Because the moment we say that, no, this act was done independently, that is impossible. Everything, and that's why we also say, La hawla wa la quwwata illa billahi al-ali al-azim. That means every action that we do is by Allah's permission. But Allah has made a system that you can choose between right and wrong. So if you choose right, Allah will help you to do right. If you choose wrong, Allah will help you to do wrong. But if, for example, Allah blocks you in the wrong, that means, you know, you are forced to do right. And that is not according to the wisdom of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. والحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين
إلهنا ما عاد لك مليك كون لمن ملك لبيك قد لبيت لك.
Thank you very much, dear listeners, for listening to this episode of Foresight. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. Until another episode and another great tip, fi amanillah, and God bless you all. This is the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. Shortwave 49 meters, 6040 kilohertz for Europe, and 25 meters, 11880 kilohertz for Southern Africa, and FM 91.5 megahertz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iran Sat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.